From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on the campus of Harvard University, where 6,700 undergrads showed up on campus this past fall. Now, the sticker price for Harvard is a combined $63,000, but only about 30% of Harvard students pay the full number. Most get some financial aid. And now consider this. Harvard has an endowment of $36 billion. Harvard could use their endowment, in theory anyway, to cover every single cent for every single undergrad student, and it would cost less than half of $1 billion. Their enormous endowment could withstand a full ride for every student and not really feel a dent. But Harvard spends only a tiny fraction, less than 0.1%, to help their students with the cost of college. Now, maybe that's unfair. An endowment is not exactly a giant piggy bank, and a new congressional tax is going to hit schools like Harvard with an endowment tax. Most colleges and universities will be exempt, but a few dozen schools are going to pay 1.4% tax on annual investment earnings. And you know what this debate has exposed? It's essentially exposed that I don't really know much about how endowments work. I don't think most people do. It's not something we study in school, and this is a good chance for us to learn more about how they do work. Later this hour, you're going to hear from Congressman Tom Reed, who pushed hard for this endowment tax. And in studio, we have President Don Braveman from Nazareth College back here. President Braveman, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also here is Patrick Ritchie. Happy New Year to you. Patrick is the Vice President of Finance for Nazareth College. Patrick, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Don, Harvard could just empty that they don't have to empty their piggy bank, right? I mean, $422 million is what I calculated for Harvard to cover every undergrad. Why are they such misers?
Well, I can't speak for Harvard, but I think it's important that the public understand that there are very, very few colleges in this country that have those kinds of endowments. In fact, there are about 4,000 public and private not-for-profit schools in the United States, and only 90 have $1 billion or more in endowment. So that's like 2.5% have $1 billion or more. Most colleges are more like Nazareth College. We have $70 million. So I think part of the important thing for the public to understand is what you hear about when you hear about these extraordinary amounts is really you're talking about a very, very small fraction of the colleges.
Real briefly, can I ask you, how do you feel about the tax then that Congress had pushed for, and you're going to hear Congressman Tom Reed later this hour? Is it okay with you?
I don't think it makes sense, quite honestly. I mean, it doesn't apply to us. But the reason I don't think it makes sense is to understand an endowment. The way the endowment works is people give money to the school, right? So if I want to give Nazareth College $50,000, I can just give them the cash and they could spend it immediately or spend it over a few years and then it's gone. But if I want to create an endowment, and it's up to the donor to decide that, if I want to create an endowment, I would give the school the $50,000. The school would have that forever, and the only thing they would get to spend is the interest from the endowment, which is about, and we spend about 5% a year. So what it does is it guarantees that the school is going to have this ability to give money to their students for forever. I don't understand taxing the big schools. I mean, I understand they have a lot of money, but, you know, it's kind of interesting to me, and I don't want to get into politics. I try to avoid it. But, you know, the corporations in this country are sitting on trillions of dollars of cash, literally, and they got a tax deduction in this last bill. And now they're turning around and taxing the wealthy colleges who are preparing the people who are going to have all these jobs that are supposedly going to be created by reducing taxes on corporations. So I don't understand it. It doesn't affect us at all, though.
Okay, so but let me hit a couple of points here, because I think at least this has created a window to better explain how endowments work. And so I want to be a student, and I would like you to pass or fail me this hour. So number one, the incentive behind even, let's take Harvard, which has the biggest endowment, $36 billion, they'll tell you that they want a bigger and bigger endowment because they're spending the interest every year. And if the bigger the endowment, the more interest you can spend, the more flexibility you have to help students, to help you know, pay your faculty to create new programs, et cetera. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Same thing with Nazareth. So if I were a donor and I met with you and I said, look, you've got $60, $70 million in your endowment, and that's in perpetuity here. What do you need my money for? The point is, the bigger the endowment, the more the interest annually, and that right. interest is what you can use to help.
Right. And it's important to understand that it's driven by the donor's intent. So the donor decides, if I want to set up a scholarship, my wife and I set up a scholarship at Nazareth to help promote diversity among our student body. So I could give the school the money, and it would be spent right away, and then 3 years from now, there's no money for that. But if I give it to the endowment, for as long as the school exists, there will be money coming every year from the interest that could be used to promote scholarships.
Okay. But could you, if you decided, if the NAS leadership team decided, you know what, we've got big plans and our endowment, $60, $70 million, we're not just going to spend the interest. We're going to kind of cut into that. Could you do that, Don?
Not if it's a restricted. If the donor's gift is to the college for purposes of creating an endowment to use for scholarships, that is the only thing you can be used for. Now, we could ask the donor to change his or her gift, and we do get some unrestricted funds, but we can't just simply spend most of the principal.
Patrick, is that right?
That is correct. Yes, we have, most endowments have large restrictions, or a large portion of those endowments are restricted. So they can only be used for the scholarship funds or for the uses that were identified by the donor. So that's the case of most endowments nationally, even the bigger endowments. They have significant restrictions on the endowment.
Don, do you think most people are confused about how endowments work, and can it be frustrating with the way this gets debated in the public, in Congress, and in other places?
I think it is. I think it's confusing, and part of the confusion is the public discussion always focuses on the 2% of the schools that have these large endowments. So Harvard is just not the reality for 99% of the colleges. But the public discussion gets focused on that. And so you have people thinking that we're all sitting on tons of cash that we could be using. Why are we charging so much tuition, they will say, if you have all this cash sitting there? Well, it's just not the reality for most schools.
All right, so let me ask you another question on how things work. And listeners, if you've got questions or comments about endowments, how it works, that's going to be the focus of this hour. You're going to hear Congressman Tom Reed at about 12:30 joining us for a little while. We'll also talk with our guests about other ways to reduce student debt load. That was part of what the governor rolled out yesterday, a four-point plan that we talked about on this program. And part of what people like Congressman Tom Reed and other colleagues in Congress have said is they believe taxing endowments can at least goose some of these, you know, big endowment universities to be more generous in helping students. You know, if that's a small percentage of schools and a small percentage of students, I'm curious to get beyond the endowment tax to talk to our guests about ways to actually help students more effectively with the cost of higher education. But if you want to call the program, you can do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. As the Dow goes, as the general big market indicators go, it was a good year, 20, 30, 25%, 22%, 30%, something in that range of gains. Is that generally a pretty good indicator of what the endowment gain would be? You know, do as the market goes, as the big indicator markets indexes go, is that also how your endowments go, Patrick?
Well, most colleges and universities are going to invest their endowments in a variety of vehicles to help improve their investment return. Generally, yes, it does follow the market, and typically with a smaller endowments like Nazareth, yes. I mean, we typically follow the market, but that can vary depending upon what the asset mix is for the endowment.
Okay, and so if you started this year at around $60 million, does that mean if it's a 20% year, then, I'm not good at math, that is a $12 million gain then, roughly, yes?
It can mean that. It depends, again, on how the endowment funds are invested for the year.
Okay. And does that mean for your next fiscal year that that's the money you're going to have to work with out of the endowment? Or are you sort of planning conservatively and year to year, knowing that a 22% gain in the market this year could be 3% or a market fall next year, particularly if there's a correction.
Right. So typically, universities are going to identify a portion of their endowment proceeds to use annually on scholarships and on the initiatives that Don has talked about. So when we look at how much to allocate from the endowment every year, we're looking at a small percentage. It typically is conservative because the donor's intent is to have those funds be available not only for the next year, but also for multiple years into the future.
So what we do is we take a three-year rolling average of the return, and then we typically spend about 5%. It comes out to where we spend about 5%. So 1 year you might have a 15% gain, but you know, a few years ago endowments were losing money because the stock market didn't do so well. So we typically spend around 5%.
Okay. So let's ask one more question to our guest, and then we'll start taking your phone calls. So if you're on the line, stay there, because I know there's a lot of questions coming in. How do you decide then how much to use for financial aid? That's been the biggest criticism of how endowments work, because again, people see big numbers, and for some, 60, 70 million at Nesworth might seem like a big number, and it might not, especially not when you compare it to some of the other schools. I mean, if you just want a little context here, by the way, listeners, the biggest that we mentioned, Harvard at 36, Yale's endowment 25.4 billion, Stanford 22, Princeton 21, MIT 13, Penn 10.7. Those are the biggest endowments. If you're looking locally and locally and regionally, Cornell's at 6.8 billion, University of Rochester 2.35 billion, Syracuse 1.16 billion, RIT 751 million, Ithaca College 269 million, Hobart and William Smith 205, St. John Fisher 69, and then entering this year Nazareth at 60, looks like around 70 million now, right, Don?
Yeah.
Okay. So, how do you decide what you're going to use endowment proceeds for, and how much goes to financial aid?
Well, again, a lot of it is restricted by the donor. So if I've created a, my wife and I created a fund, a scholarship fund. So that money has to be used for scholarships. Last year, I brought some numbers with me. 694 of our students, and we have a little under 3,000 students, 694 of our students were directly funded by endowed scholarships. So these are funds that the donor created for the purposes of providing scholarships. Now, there are other purposes that donors might have. So we have some endowed funds for faculty chairs. We have endowed funds for study abroad. So some donors will give us money and say, use the income to help students study abroad, help buy books. One of the interesting funds we have is a donor who, when he was in college himself, found him in his junior and senior year, had a change of circumstances and found himself in real need of money. And so now this donor has given us an endowed fund, and what we can use it for is for a junior or senior who's had a family experience where there's been a change in financial circumstances, and we can help that student as an emergency. So there are all different purposes that the donor might serve, but in the end, most of our money goes towards providing assistance to students directly.
Okay, let's get some questions and comments from the audience. We're going to start in Geneva, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS. That's Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey there. My name is Chris Loud, and I run the Boys and Girls Club in Geneva. We take care of about 200 kids a day. We serve about 80 dinners a night, but we desperately are seeking to build an endowment so that we can have the kind of income that allows us to focus on our work. And I think that that's what this attack on the liberal arts education institutions is really about, which is the conservatives taking on the ability of people doing good, solid educational work and making things accessible, making it harder for them. And I think it's just another disastrous move. And it goes beyond the educational frame. Now, I'll never get up to the billions, but we need $3 million here to run our institution so we can focus on the work for our kids, not have to run after every dollar every minute. And they should be finding ways to make it easier to build endowments and to sustain them, not trying to put burdens on educational institutions. They would burn through their endowments in just a number of years if they are forced to by the feds to spend much more than they do.
Chris, thanks for the phone call. What do our guests in the studio think of that? Patrick,
I didn't hear because there was mine was muffled. What was the question?
Chris, you want to sum up your point again there for President Braverman? Go ahead.
Sure. This attack on the endowments is really a conservative attack on the ability of institutions to take care of their core mission, rather than forcing them to run after every dollar. And if these were not liberal and seen as liberal institutions, they would never take these steps. And small organizations like mine, the Boys and Girls Club, trying to build an endowment, they should be finding ways to help us do that so we can focus on our core work, just as the universities are focusing on accessibility for their students. And they're just putting more burdens in the face of education and social service work.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the caller. I mean, the issue... When you look at our endowment and endowments at most colleges, it is exactly what you're talking about. It's creating access for students by providing financial aid, and it's giving stability over a long period of time. And one of the things that an endowment does is it allows you to look into the future and provide that kind of access in the years to come. So it gives you some kind of stability. So I agree with you. I'd be interested in hearing the congressman's explanation for why he thinks we should be taxing these endowments, because really what we're doing there is we're taking the money from the students in the programs and we're giving it to the government. At the same time, we're cutting taxes for other entities that have plenty of cash. So, I guess it's a question of what are your priorities? Obviously I'm biased, but I think higher education ought to be a high priority.
Chris, do you see a political tinge to this? Is that what you're saying as well?
Oh, absolutely. It's the Ayn Rand approach that people who anything that helps people who aren't doing it on their own is under siege these days. So I'm trying to build an endowment for a small boys and girls club so that I can focus on the work of bringing kids who are behind up to meaningful lives. They should be finding federal ways to augment my endowment to help me do this work. It's key work. And it's key work at Nazareth and Hobart Wayne Smith as well. They should not be looking for impediments to this effort. We're doing God's work here. It's not, building widgets in China and shipping them back, which they seem to want to fund these days. But this attack is particularly ill-timed and misdirected for what 90% of America's priority would be right now. Education is the key to success for all of these kids. And we need more help, not less, not more impediments.
All right, Chris, thank you for the phone call. We're going to hear at about 12:30 from Congressman Tom Reed, so we'll have a chance to get his take on the meaning and the effort behind the endowment tax that Congressman Reed was a vocal supporter and proponent of. And so let's get back to your phone calls. Alan in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Alan.
Yes, I'm here.
Yep.
I'm going to be a Harvard loyalist here. I'm a graduate of Harvard. I'm a father of a Harvard graduate. I am an officer of the Harvard Radcliffe Club of Rochester. And I think the approach that's been taken here, which is that Harvard is some kind of money bags sitting on a whole lot of money that they may be using for whatever and not using to partially underwrite the cost of attending Harvard, is just completely wrong. I don't know if you're aware that if your family income is $65,000 a year or less, you attend Harvard for nothing, free. That also means anybody whose family income is less than $150,000, they are not charged more than 0 to 10% of their income. And 60% of Harvard students are on financial aid. Harvard is a major employer in the state of Massachusetts. I think it is the largest employer in the state of Massachusetts. And it has besides the cost of undergraduate tuition, it has tremendous responsibilities in terms of its physical plant, the salaries of its faculty. My daughter-in-law is currently an instructor at Harvard and just got her doctorate there. I think that this shouldn't be holding Harvard up as some kind of insensitive organization that is not caring about its students and is getting the last penny from them while it sits on billions of dollars of endowment. It is just not true.
Okay, so, Alan, I appreciate the phone call. Harvard having the biggest endowment at $36 billion, I don't know offhand what they are, what kind of annual proceeds that they're using. I don't know, again. Would it be 5%? Don, Pat, would it be 5% maybe?
I don't know. I don't know what Harvard's annual allocation is from the endowment.
Is there? What's Nazareth's unusual?
We're about 5%.
About 5%. Okay, so if Harvard did 5%, they would still have $1.8 billion at their disposal to do whatever they wanted with. And
such as pay their professors, maintain their building,
yes,
expand their new campus in Alston, which is going to be adding a major engineering school to provide a field of study that they think they need to improve in, to pay my daughter-in-law's salary.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess what I'm saying is this, Alan. I understand that there's a lot of misunderstanding, starting with me, and I've got my hand in the air saying, please educate me on how endowments work, because it does, when you just look at the numbers, it looks like a big pot of money, and it can look obscene if you don't understand how it works. I'm with you there. But even understanding how it does work, $1.8 billion annually that Harvard could use with, I would think, a lot of discretion. I think, as our guests have mentioned, there's probably a lot of rules and stipulations
there
attached.
There are many restrictions.
Okay, sure. Sure.
Bill Gates gives so many $1 million to his alma mater, Harvard. He does it for a particular purpose.
Sure.
To endow a particular center. Harvard can't say, well, Bill, we like your gift, but we're going to take it and use it to give more scholarships to the needy students.
To some degree, that's true. But Harvard could also say to Bill, you know what we really need more of? We need more financial aid. We need 100% of students. We need to do a much better job reaching out to some of the best students, students of color, students who are disadvantaged in this country, who don't even know that there are options to them to go for a full ride at a lot of these schools. And if you don't find out until you're in the 11th grade, you're in trouble. And that's I think the Harvards of the world can still do a lot better with
it. One of the things I do is I interview applicants to Harvard. I've been doing that for 30 years to try to get people from all different walks of life and backgrounds into Harvard who is making a real outreach effort. They have gone to now more than 50% female students. They have over, I don't have the figure in my head, but they have a record number of students of color and students from lower income backgrounds. And we are told, as people who work at Harvard admissions, that this is Harvard's emphasis to reach out to these people. I'll be going out this month down to Penyan and out to Wayne County to interview students from rural schools who are applying to Harvard and trying to get in. And this is something that this university has been working on steadily during the whole time I have been affiliated with it as an alumnus. And I think that you should be a little bit, change your emphasis here. You seem to think it is, some bunch of fat cats sitting back and saying, well, we'll just use this money for whatever we want. There is a serious effort on the part of this university, and I would say a lot of other universities in the Ivy League and other quality universities, to reach out to a disadvantaged population, to increase the representation of people of color, people of foreign backgrounds, and of females in traditionally all-male universities, and I think this is having some success. I'm not saying they're perfect, but I just think the overall emphasis of this program has sort of been like, why don't these rich guys do something good with their money instead of sitting on it or using it for whatever? I don't think that's fair, and I don't think it's true.
All right, one more quick question for you, Alan, and I'll let you go, because we're going to have the congressman on in just a moment, and we've got a lot more to talk about. But let me ask you, if let's say I was, I think Phil Knight's the guy who ran Nike, and he was a big benefactor of Oregon. He gave $400 million to Stanford to build kind of a UN kind of program to help 80 students a year. So if I was going to give $400 million to any school in this country, does it make more sense to think about the public education system to help students to help a larger number of students, or should I give it to a Princeton, a Harvard, a Stanford, who already have huge endowments, and help 70 to 80 students?
Well, I'll give you another option, Nazareth.
Or Nazareth. There you go.
Right.
So if I had $400 million, what should we do with it?
Well, my feeling is, for one thing, in major donations like that are a process of negotiation between the university and the donor as to what the donor wants the money to be spent on. Harvard sends out, and I am a recipient of them, to its alumni every year, requests for money. I can only send them a few $100s, but I do. Mm-hmm. And that's unrestricted money that they can spend as they want to. But if you go to a Bill Gates or whoever this guy in Oregon is, or the person that just gave this huge donation to RIT, and they want to give a donation, they usually have some idea of what they want to give that money for. It's in line with their experience at the institution and what their emphasis is in their own lives.
Yes.
I think that's the case. These universities are trying to get money from their undergrad, their alumni, you know, their run-of-the-mill alumni, not the rich people. But if you go to a major donor, we have like Mr. Galisano here in Rochester. He has some idea of what he wants his money to be spent
on,
and the university has to respect that.
All right, Alan, I got to run. I really appreciate the phone call, and thank you for listening, and thank you for not only defending Harvard and trying to clarify. I'm with you there. The only reason I'm pushing on the $400 million and Phil Knight is this. You have most of the people who have most of the money in this country went to a, you know, pretty small cross-section of schools. And they can give the most money, and they tend to give back to those same schools. And that's how you have schools with endowments of $36 billion and $22 billion and $21 billion and $13 billion, and then plenty of other schools with endowments of $60 million, $70 million, $75 million. It's a huge disparity. And I'm not saying they can't do that, and I'm not saying that you're right. If somebody calls Nazareth tomorrow or Stanford or anybody and wants to give $300 million and they're going to attach it to whatever, they're probably going to say yes. It's a question of the public conversation we have about the value of that. What's the best value of education, and what's the best way to help, especially for those who have a lot to give? Does Stanford need another $400 million? I'm sure they can do great things with it, I would think. Harvard, sure. But I'm wondering about the Glassboro states and the others that, you know, you would change their lives overnight with that kind of a contribution. Don, am I off base there?
Well, obviously, you know, a $400 million gift to Nazareth would fundamentally change the institution. But I want to underscore something that the caller was emphasizing, and that is, and we're seeing more of this today, that is, donors give money with an idea of what they want that money to be used for, and they want to see results. I mean, you know, years ago, a lot of times donors would give unrestricted gifts. Give it to the college, use it for whatever you think is best. But more and more we're seeing donors today give gifts for specific purposes, but also wanting to see that those purposes are achieved. And that's not a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a very good thing. And it makes the colleges more responsive and more responsible.
Okay. Carrie in Penn Yan writes to us and says, Evan, I'm confused on how the new tax plan is taxing endowments. Is the total amount being taxed or just the interest? It seems like endowments are simply investments held by schools and they only spend the interest created by those investments. And if that's the case, shouldn't that income be taxed just like regular investment income is?
And the tax is going to be on net investment income.
Investment income, not the overall endowment.
Not on the overall endowment. It's on the net investment income. And the IRS still has to determine what is the definition of that net investment income. But the idea behind, I guess, the stated purpose of the tax was to tax whatever the endowments were earning in an annual basis. And that still has to be defined by the IRS. But yes, that's correct. It's not on the total endowment, but only on the net investment income.
And let me give you an example of what that number looks like. First of all, it's a 1.4% tax on annual investment earnings. Cornell University has a $6.8 billion endowment, and their president recently told Bloomberg News that if they were included in this, and there was a lot of discussion about the parameters. It turns out Cornell is not going to be hit by this, but initially in one of the earlier versions of the bill, they could have been. It would have been about a $10.5 million penalty for them this year. That's what they were looking at. And the way their president explained it to Bloomberg, that's 286 students in terms of the average aid that they get. So I know there's a lot of numbers here, but I think this is worth it. So let me just try to walk through this because we're trying to understand this. So Cornell's total endowment, $6.8 billion. Total combined tuition and fees for Cornell students is $65,000 per year. And at Cornell, they spend about $75 million per year from their endowment on student financial aid. The endowment tax would have been $10.5 million if Cornell had fallen under it. They don't. And their concern was, well, that could be 200 to 300, would have been 286 student aid packages at risk there. What I can't understand, President Braverman, is that Cornell actually would have said, well, we got this $10.5 million tax, therefore we're going to tell 286 students you can't get aid anymore. They would have found the money for that. I can't believe that that would have been. That felt like saber-rattling to me.
Well, but it does have an impact. I mean, what I'm having trouble understanding is, I guess, is what do you imagine this money is being used for, if not for the benefit of the students? So if you have a large endowment, you're getting income from it, you're using it. What do you imagine it's being used for?
Well, here's Cornell's answer. They use it for student aid. They also use it for faculty salaries.
Yeah.
And academic programs.
Yes.
Those are the three biggest.
All of which...
You're not going to take student aid first.
All of which benefit the students ultimately. I mean, at the end of the day, the reason we exist, the reason Nazareth exists, the reason Cornell exists is to educate our students. That's why we exist. And all of the money that we get from our endowment income is used for that benefit. I'll give you an example that there's a college in Appalachia called Berea College. It has a very large endowment. It's for kids who are poor, and they don't charge any tuition, nothing. And they've over the years been able to do this because they've built this endowment, and they literally use that to pay the cost of educating the kids. They are now going to have to pay a tax on that endowment income. That is going to directly affect their ability to provide scholarship money and services to their students. Now, will they be able to cover it? I hope so. But the money has to come from somewhere. And the question that one of the callers had was why, if it's income, why aren't you taxed? Well, higher education, like a lot of other entities, are not-for-profit entities. We don't pay tax on the income. This is a change. The recent tax law is a change. But the last thing I will say is we are only talking about 20 schools in the United States that are being taxed here. So, we're spending a lot of time on a fraction. Again, there are 4,000 of us, and about 20 schools are subject to this tax.
But at least now we've got a better handle of how endowments do and
yes.
don't work. Because what I have learned this hour is your number of the endowment is not a number that you can just spend at will on whatever you wanted. A lot of it is earmarked specifically. And you're conservatively basing maybe a 5% annual spend from the endowments based on income that comes from the investments,
yes,
which fluctuates.
Which fluctuate. And again, the goal of the endowment is to provide long-term support. It's to provide stability for the college. So there'll be some years, as I said, when the endowment loses money. I mean, 2007 and 8, when the market dipped, I mean, we were losing money in our endowment. It shrunk. But we were still paying out 5% because we had obligations to our students for scholarships and for programs.
Sure.
So over the long run, it averages out, and that provides stability for the college. That's why we have endowments.
What would a $10 million gift to Nazareth do?
It would depend on the donor's intent. So we've.
But if I called you tomorrow and said, Don, I'll give you $50 million, what would you like to use it on?
I would use some of it for scholarship money programmatically. I would use it to support some of our big efforts right now. So we have two major efforts. One is we are very focused on making sure that students get internships while they're in school, because we think that the best way to prepare students for the real world is to integrate the academic component with the real world component. And internships do that beautifully. So we've started a program now that we are funding out of our own pocket, where we will give a student $1,500 towards an internship to encourage that student, instead of during the summer being a lifeguard, to actually do something in his or her field. If you came to me with $50 million, I would take part of that to create an endowment to help us fund that internship program. We're also very focused on getting students global experiences because we think it's important for students to understand other cultures in the world that they're going to be living and working with people who are different from them. They need to understand that. So I would love to take some of that money and create an endowment that would help students pay the cost of travel. Most of our students are not very wealthy by any means. Every single one of our undergraduate students gets financial aid, 100%.
100%.
100%. So a lot of our students who wanted to spend a semester abroad can't afford the airfare. They can't afford the extra cost of housing or whatever. I would love to take some of that money and talk to you about how you could really change the life of a student, many students, by enabling them to get this international experience. But at the end of the day, it's up to what you want. If you came to me and said, here's $50 million, and I want you to create a program in, you know, artificial intelligence, we would think about, well, is that consistent with our mission? And if it is, then we might talk about how we could do that. But if you're saying, here's $50 million, do whatever you want, I would promote some of the existing programs at Nazareth that, again, are designed to benefit the students.
Okay. I'm way late for a break because we're waiting to hear from Congressman Tom Reed, and I know everyone's got busy schedules. His staff trying to track him down. We're hoping any minute now to do that. So let's get this break, come back, and we hope to hear from the congressman. We've got more phone calls from you, and we're going to ask our guests outside of this endowment tax, which, again, was under the guise of getting schools to provide more aid to students. Let's talk about the cost of college. I'm wondering what our guests think of the governor's plan rolled out yesterday about loan debt and what they think we can do to help with loan debt in this country. So that's all coming up on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, food deserts or food swamps. You're more likely to have heard of food deserts, the idea of geographic areas that don't have access to good, high-quality, nutritious food. But what about a food swamp? Areas that have access to plenty of food, just a lot of junk food, corner stores, fast food, and more. What category is Rochester in, and how can we change that? That's coming up next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. President Don Braveman from Nazareth College is here alongside their Vice President of Finance, that's Patrick Ritchie. And let's grab Bob in Canandaigua while we're still waiting for Congressman Tom Reed. Here's Bob in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Can you hear me?
Wow, Bob, your connection's even worse than Congressman Tom Reed's, I think. So call us back, Bob. Let's get a clearer line if you want to. 844-295-TALK. And we've been told by the congressman's staff that they're having some technical difficulties. Hey, we're the ones with technical difficulties. That's not, we'll see. No, Congressman, we hope that we can clear that up and have you any second now. Let me ask our guests to go outside, away from endowments for a moment, and I'm curious to know what you thought of Governor Cuomo, four different points on improving financial literacy for students, forcing colleges to give students a very clear, not only annual update of what their debt load's going to be, but what a monthly payment will look like once they're making those monthly payments, among some other things, kind of going after predatory lending, et cetera. John, what do you think?
I'm very supportive of what he said. I think it's important for students to understand the debt issue, what it costs to pay back debt. I can just tell you at the college, at Nazareth, we have a program called SALT that was started by a national not-for-profit organization. And students are extensively trained on how to manage their debt. A program that is interactive, it's online, and students take that during their 4 years, and we really teach them what it means to have debt and pay back. And the program has paid off. Our default rate, so nationally, the default rate on loans is about 11%. So 11% of the students default on their loans. Now, that includes for-profit schools as well as not-for-profits. For the not-for-profit colleges, the loan default rate is about 7% nationally. Our rate is 3.4%. We're literally half the national rate. So what does that tell me? It tells me a number of things. One is our students don't have a lot of debt. It tells me that they're getting jobs where they can pay back their debt, and it tells me that they are educated about how to manage that debt. So I think what the governor is doing is very important to get schools to do exactly what we've been doing for the last number of years, and it helps the students.
Now, that's managing debt. Any other thoughts on just you've had a lot of thoughts over the years on the cost of college, I know. But generally speaking, are you alarmed at $1.3, $1.4 trillion in student debt nationwide?
Again, we've had this discussion before. What I'd like to know, first of all, is how much of that is an increase because there are more students going to college. There are also more students going to college from groups that don't have the kind of income that people, you know, typically had in prior years. So I'd like to know that. I'm not alarmed if the students can handle the debt, because I think it's a terrific investment. I look at higher education as an investment. The payback is clear. The payback is clear. If you have a bachelor's degree, you are going to make a lot more money in your lifetime than if you only have a high school degree. If you have a master's degree, you're going to make more than a bachelor's. And over time, you're going to cover the whatever the cost of the education is. So, you know, people invest, you know, tens and twenties of thousands of dollars in cars that diminish in their value. Higher education is a great investment. And one of the things I'm most disturbed about, actually, in all this debate about the cost of higher education, is that we've lost any discussion about the value of higher education, not only to the individual, but to the community. You know, having people who are educated is important for the community. There is a public good that's being performed by colleges in educating people. And, you know, I read about all these people who question the value of an undergraduate education. I'd like to ask how many of those people have told their children not to go to college. I would really like to know that.
You know, you may be about to light up the phones with them like 10 minutes left here with that. But let me get back to the phones. And I'm going to try to get Bob again here in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, sorry about that.
No problem.
I'm wondering, the tax that's going to be put on these 20 universities, is it earmarked for anything in particular, possibly helping improve public schools? And secondarily, since it's only 20 universities that are affected, it seems to me they've selected, for lack of a better term, those who could best afford to pay that tax. I could understand people's frustration if it were levied on every single university, but these are people who have quite a bit of money, and yes, it's going to impact them, but it's certainly not going to have the same impact to have on smaller universities if they were taxed as well.
Yeah, Bob, I guess the short answer is I don't know if whatever tax from those 20 or so schools is going to be, I don't think so, but I don't know offhand. Patrick, Don, do you know?
I don't know, but
yeah.
No, and I'm not aware of any earmark for that tax revenue at all either.
I can tell you that Congressman Reed, in a separate interview, has said it is not meant to just be punitive, that some schools were looking at this as a punishment for having big endowments, but he said that was not the intention. But Bob, I don't know about any earmark there. I appreciate the phone call. Stephanie Townsend, who's a new member of the Pittsford Town Board, sends this email. She says, Evan, thanks for this valuable discussion about the importance of supporting colleges. It's important to recognize the contributions that colleges make to the communities where they are located. Here in Pittsford, we are fortunate to have both Nazareth and St. John Fisher. They enrich the life of our community in many ways by bringing educational and cultural programming that all in the community can access, offering expertise to their faculty and bringing resources to town college collaborations. Their students, faculty, and staff also enliven our community life and support local businesses and oftentimes work in those businesses. So while they do not pay property taxes, they do financially and in other ways benefit the town and our community.
Again, can I just underscore that? And I thank you for the comment. One of the things to remember is all the colleges are involved in community service of some kind. And again, I'll talk about it at Nazareth. It's part of our genetic makeup, actually, to be involved in community, providing assistance to the greater Rochester community. Last year, there's an organization of student development officers. They gave out three awards for community service, national awards. The three top awards went to North Carolina State, NYU, and Nazareth College. our students provided 500,000 hours, and these are documented hours, of community service. Now, if you look at that at $10 an hour, if you had to pay for it, you know, you're talking about $5 million worth of service to the community. So the colleges not only provide, colleges like Nazareth, not only provide the workforce, because our students stay in this region, they provide the workforce, they provide the art and culture that's so important to the community, but they also do a lot of community service that really benefits a lot of people in this region.
All right, let me grab an email, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. Connie writes and says, Evan, I'm probably naive, but why shouldn't colleges and universities help support this nation with taxes? Like other corporations and individuals with earned income from investments, obligations to the students can be paid out from the endowment, and taxes paid as well, from Connie.
Well, as I just said, not-for-profits don't pay tax, but one of the benefits of the college, as I said before, is the public good that we do. And that's what's been lost, again, in this discussion, is not just today, but generally about the value of higher education. We perform a public good. We are educating the public, which is important for a whole variety of reasons, not just important to the individual. And so forever, colleges have not been taxed, just like churches aren't taxed and other not-for-profits aren't taxed because of the public good that we're providing.
Here is an email from Tim in Pittsford. He says, "It blows my mind that the most well-endowed schools in America are also the most expensive schools in America. The University of Rochester in particular," he says, "I'm sick of hearing that not many kids pay the full cost. So if you can get $10,000 off your tuition, you're still paying $55,000 to go to schools like the U of R. The college should be finding ways to decrease tuition and provide access to all Americans, wealthy or not. If that means that a certain amount of every endowment goes to scholarships, so be it." He says, "I know we're supposed to bow down to the U of R because they are our number one employer and are gobbling up all of our urgent cares, etc., but maybe taxing them will get their attention of the inequality that happens right under our nose. I'm pretty informed about all of this, but tell a kid from the northeast part of our city that the University of Rochester has more than $2 billion in an endowment, and their reaction would be the same as mine." So Tim is saying maybe a tax would be a good thing, and I should tell Tim and others, University of Rochester is not going to be taxed under the new law, because the way it works is this. You've got to have $500,000 or more per student that you have in your endowment, and the U of R has about $210,000 per student in their endowment, as I understand it.
I can only speak about our college, and at Nazareth, a third of our students are Pell eligible. Now, Pell is a federal program for kids from poor families. So we have a third of our students who already qualify as relatively poor compared to most. We don't, as I said, we don't have a wealthy student body. But what I don't understand, what seems counterintuitive, is if you want the big schools to spend more on their financial aid for students, how do you achieve that? By taking the money away from them. I mean, there may be other ways to do that where you have some kind of requirement, but taking money from them is in no way going to help them provide more aid to students. So I don't see where the incentive is created.
Okay. Marla in Rochester, got to be quick here. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to point out, you talked about Ivy League schools, the people that graduate from them making a lot of money, but a lot of the students that are accepted into those schools get a lot of financial aid. And part of the reason that the tuition is high for those who can afford it is so that there is financial aid for people who can't afford it. But the endowment also provides a lot of resources that you wouldn't get otherwise. So, for example, someone is much more likely to donate to an endowed fund where the effect of the money, by just spending the interest off the money, can last for 100 years, where you're just spending just the interest off the money to provide support for students for 100 years instead of using it all up in a year or two.
Marla, thanks for the phone call. And I take that point that Marla and others are making, that the sticker price is rarely paid in full, but for the extent that students can afford that, maybe that helps students in different income brackets. And I know that President Braverman has talked a lot about, he thinks the value of making sure everyone has a chance to have access. I can tell you that Congressman Reed's office tells us he is on the phone, on the road today, and they thought they'd have better service, but their phone really only working consistently with text messages, so they apologized but could not join the conversation today. So maybe some final thoughts from our guests, 30 seconds apiece. We want to continue to reach out and help students. Patrick, effective ways to do that. Go ahead.
I think effective ways to help students are to, on the one hand with financial aid, is to provide education about what kinds of financial aid programs are available to students, and making them aware of, for instance, in Nazareth, the 696 scholarships that we do provide to our students, and making them aware of what those scholarship opportunities are, and then helping educate them about other methods of accessing higher education, if that's loan funds or scholarship funds, but doing our part to make sure they're aware of all the ways that they can access to help them pay for college.
Okay. President Braidman.
I think that colleges and can very much need to look at how do we keep our costs down so that the students can afford it. At the end of the day, what I'm most concerned about is accessibility for our students and affordability. And those two can be made possible through the income we get from our endowments.
Listeners, I want to tell you that you hear President Braidman from Nazareth a good amount on this program because they have a habit of saying yes, and we appreciate it. We reach out to all kinds of schools, and it happens to be, NAS happens to be the one place I've ever adjuncted. That was way back in 2015. I'm not on the payroll now. It was a nice experience there. It has nothing to do with this, but there's your full disclosure. President Braidman, thank you for consistently saying yes.
Thank you.
And answering the questions, and I really appreciated the time as well from Patrick Ritchie, the Vice President of Finance for Nazareth College. Thanks for being here, Patrick.
Thank you.
All right, short break. More connections coming up.